to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Dear listeners, greetings from Prashanthi Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. A loving morning, good morning to all of you, dear listeners, and loving Sai Rams. You are tuned to Radio Sai Asia Stream, bringing you the message of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And I am Raghu speaking to you live from Radio Sai. This is the segment Morning Glory, and a warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday Live. At the very outset, dear listeners, let us all collectively offer, as always, our most humble, prayerful and grateful pranams at the voice and the listener of Radio Sai, that is Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Today is 10th of August and the time right now in our studio is exactly 9:40 a.m. Indian Standard Time. And the weather climate in the Divine Valley, Prashanthi Nilayam, is very cool and pleasant. Last night there were rains. Yes, full night it rained. And right now the temperature is about 25 degrees Celsius. It's a cool and pleasant day here at the ashram. Today in the segment of Morning Glory, I'll be playing for you an interview with Dr. Soumya Gopinath Panchanatham. And in conversation with her is Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi. And this interview is part of our radio series, Tryst with Divinity, in which we listen to the experiences of Swami's devotees with Swami. Well, this interview is in two parts and today I'll be playing for you the part one and part two of the interview will be played next week. Well, dear listeners, as I'm speaking to you live right now, many devotees have lined up in Sai Kulanth Hall as every day, as always, and they'll for their salutations to Bhagavan's Mahasamadhi. So the interview that I'll be playing for you right now is about 50 minutes. And after 50 minutes, I'll be back again. I'll speak to you live again. And I'll play for you a few bhajans requested by a few listeners of Radio Sai Global Harmony. And while playing the bhajans, I'll also narrate few beautiful and wonderful incidents with Bhagavan, which happened in 1940s during the time of India's independence. Yes, as we celebrate India's independence next week, that is 15th of August, India will be celebrating her 70 years of independence from British. So this will be a nice occasion to speak on that. And next week, dear listeners, we'll also witness the celebration of Sri Krishna Janmashtami, that is the birthday of Lord Sri Krishna. So next week, that is Monday and Tuesday, that is 14th and 15th of August, Prashanthi Nilayam will be in a celebratory mood and there will be many cultural programs that will be offered to Swami in Sai Kulanth Hall, and all these cultural programs, as always, will be webcast live through our website radiosai.org, and listeners, you can watch them from your place by logging into our website radiosai.org. So first, let's listen to the first part of this interview with Dr. Soumya Gopinathan Panchanathan, and after the interview, I'll be back again, and that will be the time for Bhajan Request program. So let's listen to the interview first.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, welcome to Tryst with Divinity. My guest today is a medical doctor, a pediatrician to be precise, from the United States of America. Dr. Soumya Gopinath Panchanathan grew up in Windsor, Ontario, Canada, and came to Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba when she was 12 years old. Her parents, Dr. Gopinath and Dr. Mrs. Hema Gopinath, have had the privilege of working in the Sri Satya Sai General Hospital in Prashanthi Nilayam since 1998. Dr. Soumya Panchanathan currently resides in Arizona in the United States, where she is active in the Sai Mission. Dr. Soumya has served as the devotional coordinator and the SSC coordinator at the Mesa Sai Center in Arizona and as a regional young adult advisor of Region 9 in the United States. She currently teaches Group 4 Satya Sai Education in the Mesa Sai Center. In her professional life, Dr. Soumya Panchanathan is Associate Program Director in the Phoenix Children's Hospital Pediatric Residency Program and the Team Director of Biomedical Informatics at the University of Arizona College of Medicine, Phoenix. She is the past medical director for SHOW, S-H-O-W, which is a student-run free clinic in Phoenix serving individuals experiencing homelessness. Dr. Soumya Panchanathan's mother, Dr. Hema Gopinath, has also been interviewed on Radio Sai Stress with Divinity series, as has her husband, Dr. Panchanathan. We are hoping that somewhere along today's conversation, Dr. Panch may be able to join her as well. Dr. Soumya and Dr. Panch are parents to two young adults, Amrita and Roshan. On that note, I am delighted to welcome our dear guest, Dr. Soumya Panchanathan, to Trace with Divinity on Radio Sai. Sai Ram, Soumya.
Sai Ram.
Welcome to Radio Sai.
Thank you.
Soumya, I understand that even before you hit your teenage, your family was exposed to Bhagwan Baba in what was perhaps a very quiet town then at Windsor in Ontario, Canada. And this was along with the families of a few other Sai pioneers from Canada, such as Dr. V.P. Singh and the Bhagas. What do you remember of your introduction to Baba?
I remember that my parents felt that I was starting to become a bit rebellious.
Hard to imagine, looking
and,
at you.
And so they were seeking somewhere to take me where I would get more exposed to values, as well as some Indian culture.
Uh-huh.
And though we had known the Singh family before, somehow Swami had never come up in conversation. But this particular day, my father and Uncle Singh were at a party together, and my father started asking why Uncle Singh went back to India so frequently. And he was very surprised to note that he was going to Bangalore. And that is when he started getting exposed to Swami. And my parents thought, let's give it a try. So for both myself and my brother, we were told that we had to come for 4 weeks. We had to give it a fair try. And then after that, we didn't have to come if we didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So we came for 4 weeks, and I was particularly drawn by the music and the bhajans.
You came to Prashanthi Nilayam?
No, in the Sai Center there.
Oh, I see. So the Windsor Sai Center.
The Windsor Sai Center.
Okay.
And we went for 4 Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, unlike many events, it would start correctly on time. And it would finish correctly on time, and it was nice music, and we started getting attracted. And my parents continued, I also continued after the 4 weeks. And after that, they started putting together some sort of Balvikas, Gita, Shlokas, and those sorts of things. And that's how I got more into Swami's teachings after the bhajans.
And then when did you come to Prashanthi Nilayam and have an interface with Bhagwan in person?
So the first visit was in 1977 when I was 13. And that time Swami was not in Puttaparthi. He was in Whitefield. And it was around the time of the inauguration of the boys' hostel there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent 10 days. Swami wasn't giving darshan every day, but we spent Guru Purnima there, and that time we saw Swami, Darshan, and all that. We came to Puttaparthi for 1 day just to see what Puttaparthi was like. But I think it wasn't until 1980 when we came the next time, that, or when I came the next time, that really we started to get more interacting with Swami and more attracted to Swami on a deeper level.
Mm-hmm. Did he talk to you?
So in 1980 we had one interview, and that was the interview where my brother was admitted to college, and at that time he talked to myself and my mother and my brother. My father had already returned.
I see. Now, your decision to study medicine, it's quite an interesting story, the medical education you had and all the hiccups that came along, and Swami had a role to play in it, because your mother shared a little bit of that with us on the interview. Would you care to elaborate on it?
Sure. So in the 1980 interview, Swami told me, no medicine. So,
did you ask him?
I don't recall whether we asked. My mother may have said she's planning to do medicine.
Okay.
And Swami may have responded that way. I don't recall the exact context. But he said no medicine at that time. So I went back and I was thinking, okay, I'll do genetics or something like that.
Was it not disappointing for you because you had aspirations to be a doctor as a young teenager?
I don't recall being very attached to being a doctor.
Okay.
In fact, before that, I had planned to be a teacher.
Okay.
And somehow I drifted into the idea that I would be a doctor, and that was fine also. So this time when Swami said, and also by that time, I think I had already inside believed that Swami knew what was right for me.
Okay.
So if he said no, that was just no.
Mm-hmm.
So then I came back and I was planning, going on my merry way, I was planning to do genetics. And on the there was a deadline for applying for the entrance exam for medical college admission test. And somehow a friend called me on the very last day saying, oh, this is the last day you have to apply. So I thought, okay, is Swami testing me and he wants me not to do it? Or is Swami telling me you should do this anyway, no matter what I said? So I didn't know, so I applied. And there was a postal strike. So I said, oh, Swami was just testing and he didn't really mean.
Because the letter wouldn't reach.
Because the letter wouldn't reach. In spite of that postal strike, I got my entrance card for the exam. So when I got that, I thought, okay, I've got the entrance card for the exam. I probably should study for the exam. So then I studied a bit. And when I got the result, it was very good. So I said, okay, does Swami want me to apply? So I applied. And then I did interviews and all of that. And in 1981 summer, we came here to Puttaparthi with the Canadian Youth Group. During that trip, our chaperone had us meet Anandapur students. And I was enchanted. I wanted to be an Anandapur student. Now, in fact, my parents had actually asked me when I entered college in 1979 whether I wanted to go to Anandapur. And I had said, well, Anandapur is far from Puttaparthi, and I won't be with Swami, and I won't be with you all. So why would I want to go? But this time I could see
I remember that strangely.
In 1981?
Yeah.
Oh. And
was Shobhana, your cousin, already there?
Yes.
Yes, I remember that.
I don't know if she was already there.
No, I think she came a year
later. She came a year or two later,
yeah.
Yes. Yes. So I was very enchanted. So in one of the interviews that we got as the Canadian group, it popped out of my mouth, Swami, can I join your school? So Swami said, yes, yes, you can. I have a seat for you in the college and the hostel, but you must get permission from your parents. If you get permission from your parents, have your mother come and go directly to Anandapur. So I sent a telegram to my parents, and my mother came, and she told my father, don't tell us if she gets admission into medicine. It will only confuse us. So she came, and we went directly to Anandapur, and we must have reached about 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon, bag and baggage, and we walked into the college and met, I think, the principal or the warden, and said, we are here. And they were very surprised. And we said, Swami has told us this. And they said, no, Swami has not told us anything. You cannot stay here. You have to go back and find out. And my mother had brought all the admission type papers that you would need for a formal admission. So anyway, we came back to Puttaparthi, and admission, 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 admission. 1 month we sat. So at the end of that time, when my mother had to leave, and in the meantime, my father sent a telegram saying, I have got admission into 3 medical schools. So
In Canada.
Wow. So at the end of this month, I was in a dilemma. I had 3 medical school admissions, But Swami had said, no medicine. Swami had said, you can go to Anantapur, and he has a college seat and a hostel seat. But that is not panning out. So at this time, my mother has to leave. I cannot stay here alone. So we were really wondering how to move forward. So we went to get advice from Kasturi uncle. At that time, he was there, and he didn't answer directly, but he directed me to a book, the Book of Mirdad. And in that book, there is a phrase that says, what comes to you is yours. What you chase after is not yours. So I said, okay, well, this has come to me. So I went back and I joined medical school. And I assumed, okay, Swami, for whatever reason you have said this.
This was in Windsor?
So the medical school was in London, Ontario, two hours from Windsor.
Right.
University of Western Ontario.
Ontario, mm-hmm. Yes.
And I joined there. So I went to medical school and I did well. In the third year, I was the class president. Mm-hmm. And in the fall of fourth year, I had come for an international elective at All India Institute and came down here to celebrate Diwali with Swami. And at that time, he scolded us. He scolded me. He scolded my brother. He scolded my parents. We had three interviews where he only scolded us. See, I think what it is you never go with the idea, I will drift away from Swami. But what you do is you make 1,000 individual small decisions that slowly make you drift away from Swami. And at the end, you're left, oh my goodness, I've come so far away from where Swami wanted me to be. So that is what he was warning about, I feel, in retrospect. And so when I went back, I was really determined that I would really tighten up the way I was living and make sure that Swami would have no cause to scold, would have no cause to be disappointed in my behavior. So I went, and I went back in November. And in January, Swami came in my dream. This is 5 months before I graduate. He came in my dream and he said, if you want to please me, quit medicine. So I had entered medicine after 2 years of undergrad, so I did not have a bachelor's degree. Nowadays that doesn't happen. And I had done 3.5 years of medical school. So if I quit, I would be a high school graduate. But somehow I felt this was actually an opportunity that I would not want to miss. I don't know why I felt that, but it was an opportunity that I felt would not come my way again. If I declined it, there was no forcing, but if I declined that invitation, I would not get it again. And so I found that every morning when I would go to school, I would think, am I crazy? And every evening when I would come home, I would say, I have to quit. So I decided I would take 1 week and go home to Windsor, tell my parents, and stay at home and make the final decision. And at that time, I also sent a telegram here to Swami and to my brother to check with Swami if this is what he really meant. But again, I knew that he wanted me to determine what I was going to do without the verbal confirmation. And so after the week was over, I went back and I withdrew from medical school. And they asked, do you want to take a leave of absence? Mm-hmm. And I said, no. And because I thought I would never see them again, I said, my guru has asked me to leave medicine. And so they said, when they asked me about taking a leave, I said, no, he didn't ask me to take a leave of absence. Mm-hmm. He asked me to quit. So that's what I need to do. And so that's what I did. And then, after that, all the doubts started pouring in.
Then you packed up and went home?
Packed up and went home. And so, then we waited for Swami to give permission to come. And that permission came probably middle of April, end of March, middle of April.
Close to the time when you would graduate.
Close to the time when I would graduate. So we arrived here probably the middle of April, and for 2 weeks Swami ignored us completely. May 7th and 8th were my final exams in Canada. May 9th, Swami comes to me, calls us in for an interview, and says, huh, padipu murchacha, in Tamil, he asks me, have you finished your studies?
Mm-hmm.
And my heart fell into my stomach, and I said, Swami, you asked me to quit and leave and come. He said, that's all imagination. Would I ever tell you that? I said, Swami, you did tell me that. And my father, who's very quiet normally, he pulls out the telegram that we got back from my brother that said, yes, Swami said that he had in fact told. And so my father, no, Swami, you told. And he said, no, that time I told. Now you go back and finish. So I thought that was actually harder than leaving. But he gave us quite a few interviews that visit, and all the time he would keep saying, you have to go back and finish. This is just kindergarten. You must go ahead and do MD. Then another interview, he indicated pediatrics. He asked my mother, what branch are you? She said, cardiology, Swami. He said, pediatrics?
Mm-hmm.
He said, cardiology, Swami. He said, pediatrics? So I understood that I should go into pediatrics. So anyway, after all of that was over, he sent us on our way. He blessed us. He was so happy. And he gave us sweets, all of that. But he was very firm, you must go back and finish. So I went back. And I said, my guru has told me to come back.
You went back to the same medical school?
Yes, same medical school. So they said, okay, well, it has to go through the admissions committee again. And they will have to assess again whether you should be readmitted. And
didn't they ask you who is your guru? What is this all about?
You know, they didn't actually. At least I don't recall them mm-hmm. asking.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't ask what it was all about.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they they returned after their meeting. He returned and he said, there are three stipulations. We'll accept you back. You have to do the complete fourth year, not just half of it. And you have to do it like a third year. It's normally is electives and selectives, but the third year is more every rotation you have to do. So you have to do the major rotations all over again. That was the first stipulation. That was easy. The second stipulation is that you had to provide a letter from a person of your religion that says this is normal. And it is not
turn
normal.
Your life upside down because your guru said so?
Right.
Okay.
But this is a normal Hindu thing that
okay.
is, that people of this faith would understand this. That this is not an aberration. This is a normal thing to do. But I think it's not. So, it is not a common thing for a guru to say this, or someone who lives particularly in the West to listen to it.
Hmm.
So, and also, you can't get someone who is a Sai devotee to write this letter because there's no professional Sai devotee. They have no religious standing. Uncle Singh, who was the center president at the time, was a labor negotiator.
Hmm.
So he had no specific credential that says that he would be knowledgeable about the Hindu faith to answer this question for them.
Yeah, he wasn't like a minister of the Sai Church or
correct,
something.
Correct, correct. That's exactly what they needed. It was somebody with some credential.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a professor in the University of Windsor. He was a professor of religious studies. He was not a Sai devotee at that time. But he wrote a beautiful letter. And I don't know that he thought we were doing the right thing. But he wrote a beautiful letter that says that in the Hindu faith, that the guru does have authority over your life. There is no such thing as spiritual life and worldly life. There's only life.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he says, if with his farsightedness, with his ability to see beyond what we as normal people can see, if he says that it is good for you to do this, then you do it.
Mm.
So that was the second stipulation. Mm. And the third stipulation was to be assessed by a psychiatrist to make sure that I was sane, I suppose, but also to make sure that I was not under the influence of a cult.
Mm-hmm.
Because my guru told me to quit, I quit. My guru told me to come back, I came back. If my guru told me to harm somebody, would I do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was the question uppermost in their mind. How would I respond for that?
Especially as a doctor, where you wield so much power.
Mm. So he asked me that, and it was, in fact, that it was entirely my choice to quit. Swami never said, you have to quit. He said, if you want to please me, quit. It was my choice to go back. While he said, go back. And it was difficult to go back and face the same people and have them think that I perhaps had lost it.
And all your peers would be a year ahead of you.
They would be a year ahead. And they had already graduated.
Mm, naturally.
I was with the class behind.
Yeah.
Or I would be entering the fourth year with the class behind. So that was actually quite difficult. But it was still my choice. And so I think that argument, that all of this was entirely my choice.
Did Swami's name come up in this psychiatric assessment?
It must have. I don't recall it being a major part of the questioning.
And what was the outcome of the evaluation?
The outcome was that I was sane and that I could return and finish. And I think they were very happy to have me back.
Mm-hmm.
I had been a very good student. I had been a good person in the class. I had been class president. I had, I think I had carried myself well. And I think they were disappointed that I had left. And I think as long as they were sure that I would be good as a physician and safe, I think they were happy to have me back.
That's one interesting story. I've never heard of a professional career being so influenced by this concept of surrender and infinite resignation to the will of the guru, but very happy outcome. So, Soumya, when you look back at this drama where you quit medical school, then rejoined and went through the whole big drama, what do you see? What was the takeaway for you in hindsight?
So many people ask me this question. And I don't know why Swami has had done it, but I think he was very smart in not letting me know why he did it. Because I have contemplated and reflected, and I feel like I have gained so many different things from this episode. The first is the ability to walk alone when everybody thinks that you're doing the wrong thing. My parents were the only people who walked with me during that time. And in fact, I feel that they took the brunt of all of the criticism of our action. The second thing is, in addition to the ability to walk alone, it took courage to let go of something just before you finished. And part of it was I felt guilty for having used a spot that somebody else could have studied in. The third thing is that we don't do these actions because we have faith. By doing actions that require faith, you develop faith. And I feel that my faith in Swami strengthened because I did these actions and it worked out, rather than doing them because I had the faith. So I think these are the main things that I feel I gained. And I'm sure that as I reflect further and further in my life, I'm sure I will continue to find new things, because each time people ask me this question, I answer it differently and find different things as points that I learned from this episode.
So you graduated with pediatrics?
No, that time I graduated in medicine.
Yeah, and later
and
you went on
I
to
went
specialize.
On to specialize in pediatrics, and he had no further bumps and jumps along the way. He decided, okay,
you
enough.
Had been tested and found tried and true.
Tried and true, yes.
Yes, by then. Very interesting. Now, Swami, you live in the United States of America. You've been a working woman or professional lady all your life. Mm-hmm. And then you have also raised a family.
Yes.
What do you see as the greatest challenge in managing this home-work balance and staying true to Swami's values? A lot of people find that very hard to think that, you know, I can stay on the path of Swami, continue to be part of the Sai mission, raise a family and also progress in my profession, because these are very demanding roles, each one.
Yes. So I think each person has to design that work-life balance correctly for themselves.
How have you designed
it? So
yours?
That's so the way I chose to do it is I was part-time for almost the entire time till the kids were in late high school.
Oh, I see.
I was part-time. The first 7 years when we were still in Canada, when the children were very young, I worked one or two nights a week, and I was home during the day. I worked maybe two or three half days during the day. And but I spent a lot of time with the children. And when we moved to the United States and they started school, at that time, the first year, I went full-time. The problem with that full-time work for me was not that I wasn't available during the time that they needed to be home, but that there was just not enough of me left for them. And so for me, I was not able to do more than part-time during those years. And I was in a private practice for all of those years, for about 8 or 9 years. And there was a time when even that was not the correct balance. And I decided, okay, let me go back to school. And the last 2 years that they were in high school, or at least my daughter was in high school for the last 2 years, I actually went back and got a master's because that was more conducive to the time that I needed. However, interestingly enough, the career advancement that I've had since 2009, which is when I graduated from the master's program, has more than made up for everything that I put on hold in the first 8 years. So I felt that I think if I had been on the career path during those years, I probably would have got to the same spot. But Swami guided me to take the path that way. So at that time, from 2009, I have been full-time. Interestingly, when my father was sick, I went to my boss and I said, I would like to go down to part-time. And I think I may even have to do contract work because I want to be available for my father.
But your father was in Puttaparthi.
Yes. So I wanted to be able to come and go more frequently. So my boss actually said, it's only a scheduling problem. You work extra when you're here and then you collect all your extra days and you do 2 weeks of non-clinical work. So all my lectures, all my assessments, evaluations, everything that I needed to do that was non-clinical, I would do in Puttaparthi. And I was making about 3 trips a year for 2 weeks each time to actually be available to be with my father during those years when he was declining. And so I feel that Swami has worked out exactly when my family has needed, exactly when I should progress in my career, exactly how my career should be structured so that whatever family, I wouldn't call them responsibilities, whatever family sharings and being part of the family, whatever things I wanted to do as part of my family, I was able to do that in the way that satisfied me. Now, there will be other women who will find that working full-time, it works for them. There will be other women who will step off the career path for a period of time and be full-time mothers. There were a few times when I had to not work for a period of 6 or 9 months. And I found that that was also not correct for me, where I was completely home. So the exact balance seemed to be about 5 to 6 hours a day during the years that I was raising the children and being part of the center and teaching SSE, mm-hmm. all of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're an integral part of the PSY activities in the United States.
Yes.
In your considered opinion, why is it that we see a very homogenous devotee base in the United States, and most of the devotees come from the Indian diaspora?
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to be a multi-faith, open to all spiritual movement, not confined or pinned down or connected to any one religious faith.
Yes, and different centers have managed to do that. Some centers have managed to do that better than others. I'm not sure I actually know the answer to this. I do find that devotional activities are very susceptible to what people enjoy and like. And I think when your initial seed devotees are Indian, what happens is a devotional program is set up according to what the hearts of those devotees respond to.
Right.
Having said that, I think slowly but surely more English bhajans are coming, a more simple altar is coming in different centers, and with the next generation who has grown up seeing just the unity of faith, they're perhaps less connected to the physical Swami and how things are done in Puttaparthi. The previous generation is very attached also to how things are done in Puttaparthi.
Hmm.
And so I think that has also probably affected it, because even some of the devotees who are of American descent, they enjoy the Sanskrit bhajans as well. But that there is a tension, and I don't know that we have found the exact answer to keep the devotee base that you have, but also slowly, slowly expand, expand, expand. What we have started to do is do service projects with some of the other groups. We have the group of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Mormon group in Phoenix, where we do some service projects with them. We have the Jain group. We've done service projects with them. We have visited the Gurudwara and the Buddhist groups. I believe we've also done activities within, with a Christian church and a Jewish synagogue. As well, we do service activities with Habitat for Humanity, which is a Christian-based organization. So I think perhaps that is the way.
Building bridges.
Building bridges is the way to make it more
collaborative
and have more of the outreach. And we have had devotees from other religions attend SSE briefly for 1 or 2 years.
I see.
But I don't know the answer to it, to how to make it more similar to the general public.
Mm-hmm. So you've been an SSE guru for years. That must have been, that's a great way to connect with Swami, isn't it?
Absolutely. I started as an SSE teacher probably about 14, 15 years ago. And I remember when I started, I told Swami, Swami, I don't know anything, so you have to give me the lessons and I will deliver them. And in fact, over time, there have been whole stories that he has, it's almost like I'm taking a dictation. I remember one time, I got up at about 4 in the morning, and I immediately got a paper and pen, and I wrote and wrote and wrote for an hour, and I had a play written. And other times, he has given me an image around which a whole SSE class will come.
So when you say given, what do you mean?
It appears in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Just like it appears in my ears, or I can hear it, he dictates. And in fact, the first time it happened, I was doing a play, and I had planned out that this story will come, and then this story will come, and a person was climbing up the mountain, and at the top of the mountain, they were going to get the treasure, and the treasure was going to say peace on earth. I planned it all, and he was going to stop and have experiences along the way, each of which is an SSE class. He hijacked my story. He hijacked my story, and he continued and had other experiences, and this time was the first time it had ever happened. So,
how did that happen? Did he write on your script or
no? I did the first two stories.
Hmm.
The first story was that story of the king and the minister. Everything happens for the best.
Good, yeah.
The second story, I think, was the six men of Hindustan, that the elephant story.
Yes.
And there was a third story that I had also done, I had read. And after that, I could hear his voice. He was dictating, 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 dictating. Finally, he gets to the top of the mountain. He does not find the treasure. He comes home, and he's very disappointed because the original setting of the play was that if you climb the mountain, you will find treasure unbelievable and power, immense treasure and power unimaginable. And so he comes home and he waits and waits and he's so disappointed. So he goes back to the wise man who told about this story. And he said, see, it was all completely, I dug and dug for 3 days and I fell unconscious. There was a man at the top who helped me recover. And he told me that many people have come and it is always his job to tell them that there's no treasure at the top. And so he comes back down and he's so disappointed and he's telling this to the wise man. He said, no, what is the original instruction? If you climb the mountain, you will find immense treasure and power unimaginable. It didn't say you will find it at the top. Now look at all the experiences you had along the way. Each one taught you a lesson. And even getting to the top and using up every last bit of energy in this quest taught you that you should not give up. Then you come back down. Now live your life. So he had been an ordinary man living an ordinary life. And the wise man tells him, now go be an extraordinary man living an extraordinary life. Swami completely changed what the lesson was of that story.
And what you hear his voice in your ear, is it in English?
For me it is. Oh. For me it is. And so this was the first time. And I was so, I would take the pen and paper everywhere because I would think that he would talk and I would feel I was missing it. Even when I was driving, he would do that. And I would stop at the red light and I would get out my pen and paper and write. Then I realized on the second story that he was not, he would wait. If I couldn't write right then, he would hold off, he would wait. And he did this with small lessons. and he did this with full plays. There were about 6 or 7 plays during that period of time that were all dictated by Swami. And beautiful plays, very inspiring stories. And each lesson would start and it would grow and it would develop and it would only be ready on the day it was to be delivered, like a baby. It was like a baby who is only ready when they are delivered.
At the right time.
At the right time.
Totally.
So having that experience with Swami during the years that I have been teaching has brought me closer to Swami and has taught me many things. He also taught me as a mother. One thing he said that has always stuck with me, every day pray with your children and pray for your children. And that has stuck with me also. It guided me through the years that they were small. But it has continued. Every day pray with your children and pray for your children.
Then now they live elsewhere, right?
Right. So pray for your children still.
And do they continue to pray themselves?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes. I am fortunate that way that my children have been impacted by Swami themselves. And but every child who is born in a family that believes in Swami has a different journey. It is not the journey of how did you come to Swami. It is the journey of how did you come back to Swami. Because you have to walk away a little bit to recognize, no, my life is not better without Swami. And then you come back. And then it is your belief in Swami. It is your faith in Swami. And I feel that the time that I was, that Swami scolded, he was pointing out that I had drifted from him. And that is my trip back to Swami.
Yeah, but why is that drifting necessary? Because sometimes parents have the best intentions and Swami has the best intention. The Sai education gives you this amazing route which can lead to great happiness without the distractions and the complications of teenage life and many other issues and hassles. But somehow people find it is necessary to deviate, have the pitfalls and then come back.
I think it is because we take for granted the life and the happiness that we have. And we assume that our grounding in Swami has nothing to do with our happiness. It is when we say, is this mine? See, early on, it is our parents that provide that for us. And we don't recognize its value, just like we don't recognize most of what our parents give at the time. We don't recognize that this is so integral to our own happiness. And so we walk a little away. And different people walk different distances away. Those who are paying attention won't walk very far. If you're not paying attention, you'll fall, trip, and then have to go through her difficulties and then come back.
True. Well said. There seems to be a pattern that a lot of the children somehow go through.
And often I reassure parents that this is something that I have seen a lot and I've experienced myself. And that it is necessary for them to feel that it is their own faith. Because when it's your parents' faith, there's only so much far it can take you. It has to become your own. Maybe that is the process of how it becomes your own.
A lot of children feel they cannot commit to a very sustained, regular relationship with Swami, but whenever they are in trouble, they pray to Swami and they tell their parents to pray to Swami.
Correct. They do. I think it is because of that foundation that they know that Swami, faith in Swami has meaning, has power. But I feel that it will be good if they can sustain that even when things are not difficult. And that is the process of maturing spiritually, is to recognize that you want this connection even when you're happy. and that is what makes you happy. It is not that your life will be easier in an objective sense, but it is definitely easier in the subjective sense when you're
well
connected
said.
With Swami.
Yeah, very well said. But somehow I find even in the objective world, Swami takes away a lot of difficulties and challenges, and He provides a helping hand whenever you're stuck.
Correct.
Much
Correct.
Faster.
Correct.
And you're on the subjective level, your coping abilities are
Absolutely.
Enhanced.
Absolutely. I mean, I really think that the whole concept of burnout and excessive working and not being connected to your own inner self, all of that, and I feel that people get less stressed if they stay connected to Swami. People can be less stressed and do a lot of work and a lot of good work. I mean, I think if you look objectively at the amount of work that gets done, when you are able to focus on your work, it gets done so much more quickly.
And that piercing focus, that one-pointed focus comes when you live a disciplined life.
Yes.
I think you become so much more productive.
You do.
Achieve so much more in such little time.
Absolutely. I actually should share with you one of the exercises I give the students. If you, I think you might have seen on the internet, there's the story of the rocks. And one man is standing in front of a class, and he tells people to put the big rocks in.
In the jar.
In the jar. Mm. And then he says, is this full? And they say, yes. And then he puts smaller rocks in the jar. And they say, yes. And then he puts the sand, and then he puts the water and all of that. So I have a modification of that. Mm-hmm. I tell all my students that I have a magic ball, a magic rock or a magic ball, that if you put it in, every other rock becomes smaller. And this ball, when you initially put it in, it looks like it just takes up space, like any other ball. And that is the ball of spiritual sadhana. When you first put it in, it seems like, oh, it's an extra 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening and an extra 2 hours on a Sunday. But over time, it makes your work take less time. It makes you much more effective, efficient. There's less conflict, so things don't take as much energy. And that ball is Swami's spiritual sadhana. And so each of those other tasks that you have to do and each of those other aspects of your life that you are trying to explore, they don't take as much time or energy. And so you do become far more productive. There's another exercise I would like to share that we do with our group for kids.
Please.
We have one of them blindfolded. We've created a path that meanders. And three of the other students, we assign one to be the voice of God. The person doesn't know which one is the voice of God. And the other two are supposed to be other voices. And they should try and get the student off the path. And their exercise is to walk the path and try and figure out which one is the voice of God.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And we use that exercise to point out that sometimes it's very difficult to know which is the voice of God. So how else can you look at all the competing voices in your head and say, which one is the voice of God? So these kinds of exercises and subsequent discussions can help to make these lessons concrete. And then they start to listen to their voice of the conscience.
So what determines the voice of God?
You mean in real life?
No, in this game.
In this game, it's just a game. They're supposed to tell how they thought, how they, obviously, what they'll say is something like, I had seen the overall path, and I knew that if I went left, it wouldn't be correct, or something like that. Or they said, I thought this person's voice was calmer. Mm-hmm. Or they might say, I thought you would have chosen this person to be God. Or,
okay.
You know, but it's a game. The point is, it's in real life, that's what we talk about, is that it should always be aligned with Swami's teachings, and it should make you a better person. As long as what you are doing is making you a better person, any difficulty you're going through is challenging you to become more patient, is challenging you to become more kind, is challenging you to become more disciplined, then take those challenges. As soon as you find that you are actually finding it so difficult that you are becoming crankier, you are becoming more angry, remove yourself from that situation temporarily. And then go back to it. If it is meant to be part of your life, you have to go back to it. But you remove yourself so that you can listen to Swami's voice again and get more ideas.
Very nice. Very practical suggestion. Good advice. Thank you.
Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam. Thanks to the overwhelming response to Radio Sai's Karoke Sai Bhajans, released in July 2017. Here comes the second offering, a set of 9 bhajans. We also have the Sarvadharma Prayer, the Asutoma Sadgamaya Hymn, as well as the Mangala Arati. And like before, you can download them from our website, radiosai.org. Please feel free to visit our website and use them in your Sai centers, in your Sai Bhajan sessions, and in your home to practice Sai Bhajans, to make every Sai Bhajan session an elevating and supremely fulfilling experience. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
Dear listeners, once again, greetings and loving Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. I am Raghu from Prem Radio Sai, and this is the segment Morning Glory in today's Thursday Live. Till now, dear listeners, you listened to a conversation with Dr. Soumya Gopinath Panchanathan. In conversation with her was Radio Sai's Karuna Munshi, and this conversation was part one of the conversation. Part two of the conversation will be played next week. Dear listeners, as always, please send us your feedback by writing to listener@radiosai.org. And let me tell you, there are about 200 such conversations in our website with Swami's devotees, in which Swami's devotees share their experience with Bhagavan. You can download them and listen to it at your leisure. Today is 10th of August, and 5 days from now, that is 15th of August, India will be celebrating her 70 years of independence. And on this occasion, dear listeners, I just thought that I will share with you all two beautiful incidents that happened in 1940 in Prashant Nilayam. The first incident happened in 1943 and it goes like this. Well, let me tell you, that year Swami was just a 17-year-old teenager, Satya. So Satya had a schoolmate, his name was Abdul Kader. And in 1943, dear listeners, the India's freedom struggle, independence movement was in its peak. And this boy Abdul Kader, who was Swami's schoolmate, was also involved in India's independence movement. And there was a strong demand by all the Indian nationalists for home rule, which means India will be like a dominion under Britain, but Indians will have self-rule. Home rule is not a complete independence, but Indians were struggling at least, demanding at least a home rule, if not complete independence. So this boy Abdul Kader went to Swami and told Swami, "Swami, I want to leave studies and join completely in India's freedom struggle, and we are looking for a home rule in India and such things." He was telling Swami and asking Swami's permission and suggestion. And for this, the 17-year-old Satya told, "Listen, if you want to join freedom struggle, you join. If you don't want to join, you don't join. But 15th of August 1947, India will get complete independence." Well, dear listeners, this Swami told in 1943, that is 4 years before India got independence. And Abdul Kader was very happy. He went running everywhere and told everybody that Swami has told that India will get complete independence in 1947, 15th of August. And as always, no one believed in it, but it happened really true. So this was one incident, and another incident happened in 1950, well, 3 years after India got independence. It was on 14th January 1950. On that day, Swami's elder sister, Parvatamma, delivered a baby girl. And Swami named the baby girl as Samrajya Lakshmi. That is, Samrajya means a sovereign nation, and Lakshmi is goddess of wealth. So Samrajya Lakshmi means the goddess who will shower wealth on a sovereign nation. Well, on 14th of January 1950, this name didn't make any sense because India was not still a sovereign republic nation. India had got complete independence, but India was not a republic nation. During those days, Swarajya Lakshmi was a common name. Swarajya means complete independence. So some of the elders, like Mother Ishwaramma and others, asked Swami if Swami by mistake told the name as Samrajya Lakshmi instead of Swarajya Lakshmi. And Swami told, no, it should be Samrajya Lakshmi. And dear listeners, this was on 14th of January 1950, and 12 days later, that is on 26th of January 1950, India was declared a sovereign republic nation. So on that day onwards, this name Swarajya Lakshmi made sense. Well, dear listeners, 15th of August, that is next week, we are celebrating India's 70 years of independence from British. So I just thought it will be a good occasion to narrate these two incidents today. Okay, the time in our studio right now is 10:40 a.m. Indian Standard Time, and I've got 20 minutes in this segment, and now it's time for Bhajan Request Program. So in these 20 minutes, I'll try to play 6 bhajans requested by 6 listeners, Radio Sai listeners. So the first bhajan is Nandalala Nandalala Dayakaro Bhagwan, requested by Miss Sai Sudha Balchandran. The second bhajan will be Sai Ishwari Amba Jagadishwari, requested by Mr. Chote Lal Mirakur from the capital of India, New Delhi. The third bhajan is Araj Suno, requested by Miss Sweta Jaiswal. And Miss Divya Trivedi has requested 3 bhajans: Prema Mudita Manase Kaho, Sai Prem De Shanti De Anand De, and Ishwaramba Priya Tanaya. Well, I have got another 15 minutes, and I hope that I'll be able to play all the 6 bhajans. And at 11 a.m., Brother Prem will be here to take on the Thursday Live with his segment Radio Sai Answering Booth. So, dear listeners, I place this segment at Bhagwan's lotus feet and I take your leave. Let's listen to these bhajans. Sai Ram.
Nandalala, Nandalala, Daya Karo Bhagwan. Nandalala, Nandalala, Daya Karo Bhagwan. भवसागर से पार उतारो भवसागर से पार उतारो कृपा करो भगवान नंदलाला नंदलाला दया करो भगवान सागर से पार उतारो दया करो भगवान कृपा करो भगवान कृपा करो भगवान नंदलाला नंदलाला दया करो भगवान Saishwari Amba Jagadishwari Satya Saishwari Amba Jagadishwari Kalyani Kanchipuri Kamakshi Parameshwari Amba Parameshwari Parameshwari Amba Parameshwari Matangi Madhura Puri Meenakshi Kalyani Kanchipuri Kamakshi Saishwari Amba Jagadishwari Parameshwari Amba Parameshwari Matangi Madhura Puri Meenakshi Matangi Madhura Puri Meenakshi Saishwari Amba Jagadishwari
सुनो मेरे परम कृपालो
अरज सुनो मेरे परम
कृपालो अरज सुनो मेरे परम कृपालो
अरज सुनो मेरे परम
कृपालो भक्तीश्वर साई देवा ईश्वर साई देवा
ईश्वर साई देवा
अरज सुनो मेरे परम कृपालो
अरज सुनो मेरे परम कृपालो
सत्य सनातन अंतर्यामी
सत्य सनातन अंतर्यामी
सकल चराचर तुम हो स्वामी
सकल चराचर तुम हो स्वामी
सत्य सनातन चराचर तुम हो स्वामी
चराचर तुम हो स्वामी
जनन मरण से पा बंधन से उधार करो,
बंधन से उधार करो।
अरज सुनो मेरे परम कृपालो,
अरज सुनो मेरे परम कृपालो।
परतीश्वर साई देवा, सुनो मेरे परम कृपालो, सत्य सनातन अंतर्यामी, सकल चराचर तुम हो स्वामी, उधार करो, बाबा भव बंधन से उधार करो,
अरज सुनो मेरे परम कृपालो।
साई प्रेम दे, शांति दे, आनंद दे, बाबा प्रेम दे। साई प्रेम दे, शांति दे, आनंद दे, बाबा प्रेम दे।
शांति दे आनंद दे बाबा प्रेम दे साईं प्रेम दे शांति दे आनंद दे बाबा प्रेम दे।